I am the Solid Monster, and this is your AEW Dynamite review for Wednesday, March 23rd, 2022. 25 years to the day of one of the greatest matches in wrestling history, the submission match between Bret the Hitman Hart and Stone Cold Steve Austin at WrestleMania 13. Tonight was kind of like a Bret Hart appreciation night on Dynamite. We saw a lot of Hitman influence here up and down the show tonight. And speaking of Austin, AEW was back in Texas for the second straight week. Of course, last week, AEW was in Thunder Rosa's hometown of San Antonio for her big women's championship win in the steel cage over Dr. Britt Baker, DMD, who was not on the show tonight. But tonight, we had an excellent, I would say, first 80 minutes or so of the show, maybe 90. And I wasn't as fond of those last 20, 25 minutes, half hour maybe, of the show. Definitely not as strong as the first part of it. But I thought overall it was a really fun show, highlighted by some really fun matches. We opened actually with a great pro wrestling match between CM Punk and Dax Harwood, two guys who know how to work. You put them together one-on-one, they had a great match, I thought. The insanity of the Texas Tornado match. I know we had one already at Revolution a few weeks ago. This one was not all that different, but I had a lot of fun watching it. And of course, Adam Cole and Jay Lethal, two former Ring of Honor world champions, going at it toe-to-toe, showing what they can do in that ring tonight. And hopefully a nice showcase for Jay Lethal to show people that, hey, I'm here. Hello. I can do more, you know, on Dynamite instead of just relegating me to dark every week. Those two went in there and had a great match tonight as well. Those are the highlights of the show. Super chats are open. Of course, I'm going to be reading your messages a little bit later on. We'll hang out and get those likes up. Let's shoot for, 300 if we can. Let's shoot for 300 here during the live stream if we can get those likes on up. I do want to also just mention one thing here before we move on. I did just mention the WrestleMania 13 submission match 25 years ago today. We did something real fun for channel members here on YouTube. Earlier today, I had a bunch of you join me for a live watch-along of that match from WrestleMania 13. Talking about Bret Hart against Steve Austin, what led up to it, the match itself, the fallout coming out of the match, and it was a lot of fun. A lot of fun. You guys seem to enjoy it. It is now archived. If you are a channel member, it doesn't matter what tier you are on, you will have access to go back, and you can even sync it up on Peacock. The time code is in there and everything, and you can watch along. And who knows? You might learn a few things during the watch along. The other thing, for those who are not aware, Sound Off Gamer is back. And the first installment is now up for your viewing pleasure if you missed it. It is my first foray into the world of WWE 2K22. I'm going to be starting my Rise mode very soon. We're going to have the Solid Monster on his journey through the Performance Center, which should be most interesting. So that is coming soon. So that gamer video, first play, is up now in case you missed it. So a lot of good content on the channel. If you want the gaming content, you got the gaming content. If you want your Dynamite review, that's why you're here. You want watch-alongs, we have that too. But let's get into this Dynamite show, which opened with the return of CM Punk, his first appearance since the dog collar win over MJF at Revolution a few weeks ago. One-on-one against Dax Harwood of FTR. We had loud chants for CM Punk. This crowd in Austin, Texas was very happy to see CM Punk back on television. Loud CM Punk chants all throughout the match, really. Harwood came out. He hugged his tag team partner, Cash Wheeler, up on stage, and Wheeler went to the back. He did not come down to the ring with him, at least not at first. So Harwood came down by himself. The Gun Club, Ass Boys, whatever they're calling themselves these days, they were in the crowd mocking and taunting Harwood at one point. They didn't, you know, get involved, but Harwood sort of gave them the death stare. And that also got them asshole chants. So they fought up top. After a few minutes, a lot of chain wrestling back and forth. Just good, solid wrestling to start things out. A little bit later on, they fought up to the top rope where Punk sent Harwood to the mat, set up for the elbow drop that he does, but Dax popped up, crotched Punk on the top turnbuckle, and hit a superplex. He followed that up with a diving headbutt, two count only. I mentioned the Bret Hart influence on this show. They did the Bret Hart Dynamite Kid suplex spot out over the top rope to the floor, which is always a dangerous spot, but it looks great. It looks cool. So they tumbled out to the floor. I mean, you had to know there would be some... When you saw that this match was announced for this show, CM Punk literally broke down crying in the media scrum after Revolution a few weeks ago, talking about Bret Hart. Nobody even brought him up. He was talking about finding a young AEW star approaching him in the back. He didn't name who it was, who came up to him after the dog collar match and said, "I got into this because of you. I was such a huge fan of yours. The only reason I'm a wrestler now is because of you." And I guess it made him think of Bret Hart. And he went on this whole, not a rant, but he went on this whole diatribe about Bret and how it's unfair, how his career ended. He's crying, literally tears coming out of this guy's eyeballs. And then you have Dax Harwood, who is an unabashed Bret Hart mark. Nothing wrong with that, but he is a huge Bret Hart. Really, both members of FTR. Huge fans of Bret Hart. So you had to know, on today of all days, there would be some spot or something they would work into the match. I mean, for God's sakes, when Punk came back and had the match It All Out with Darby Allin, they literally modeled that after a Bret Hart match. Almost move for move. Like a love letter to the man. So I was not surprised to see them work that spot into this match. Wheeler, at this point, came back out to ringside to check on his partner. Punk went for the GTS, but Harwood landed on his feet, took Punk down, and locked on the sharpshooter. How about that? Punk then managed to escape, and he locked on the Anaconda Vice for the tap out. I wrote only a few words here to sum this up. A great professional wrestling match to open the show, which is what this was. The crowd was great. Pretty much for the entire night. I gotta give kudos to the crowd there in Austin, Texas. You know, sometimes they hit certain cities, and for whatever reason, the crowd really isn't all that into what they're seeing. Other weeks, they're going nuts. And this was one of those weeks. They were into pretty much most everything on this show, certainly in the first half, at least. And so it made this feel like a really fun spectacle that we were watching. When the match was over, though, what was interesting, even though Jim Ross sort of, he talked all over, Excalibur was trying to point out what Punk was doing, and Jim Ross just steamrolled over him, but Tony Schiavone brought it back when JR was done talking to the fact that Punk was, you know, he was pantomiming, he was motioning around his waist, signaling that he wants championship gold. And they said, we don't know what championship he's motioning for. They said, could it be the TNT title? No. Could it be the tag team title? No. He's motioning for the AEW. Maybe he's motioning for the TBS title. Maybe he's going to be the one to be the person to hand Jade Cargill her first loss. Actually, you put Jade Cargill in the ring with CM Punk, I'm not so sure Punk wins that match. But obviously, he is teasing that he is going to be going after the AEW World Championship. And so it begins. And so it begins. But Punk was super over. This felt like the continuation of a babyface turn, a slow-moving babyface turn for FTR. Of course, the first element to it was them firing Tully Blanchard, who hasn't been seen since. So they got rid of Tully, and now they just go out there. In this case, Dax, you know, he goes out there and he just has a great match. And Wheeler, no interference. There was no heel shenanigans with them. That's how you know. That's how you know that they're on their way to a full-fledged babyface turn. Later on came a backstage segment, which only solidified it further. They were being interviewed in the back by Tony Schiavone, and Wheeler was praising his partner for, you know, wrestling from the heart. He called Austin and Colton Gunn young pups, and Harwood admitted that he and Wheeler have done some, they've done some bad things in their day. They've done some bad things in their career, but he can't stand a spoiled brat. And he said that he and Wheeler are the best team on Mondays, Wednesdays, or Fridays, and that they would see the Gun Club next week on Dynamite. So again, the babyface turn. Now, all you need to do now to solidify it is bring Brett in as the manager. they've been teasing it. I would think for at least one night, one of these weeks, he's got to show up. That'll solidify the turn right there. No way they're going to walk out there with Bret Hart in their corner and not get cheered. It's only a matter of time. So this was great. We had an 8-man tag, Texas Tornado-style tag team match. It was Sting, Darby Allin, and the Hardy Boys, tag team partners for the first time, taking on Private Party, The Butcher, and The Blade of the Andrade family. Andrade was out there with them, but he was all suited up. He was not, you know, dressed for competition. So this did not take very long. As soon as the heels get down to the ring, here comes Darby with the immediate torpedo dive out onto the Butcher. That's coming off the match they had on Rampage last Friday, which Darby won by countout. He gave him a coffin drop on the floor, and the Butcher was unable to return to the ring in time. So on Rampage, the Butcher got counted out, which actually was a pretty... I don't know if I'd be willing to take that move. I know Darby is not... He's not a big guy. Probably 170 pounds, something like that. But still, would you take a coffin drop from Darby Allin falling back first with all of his weight onto your body on the floor where there's no give? I'd imagine that'll knock the wind out of you. Maybe not the Butcher, because he's a big guy. Would fucking kill me. So anyway, he did a torpedo dive out onto the Butcher. No sooner did Darby, and I'm like trying to take a tornado match, trying to take notes on it is impossible, right? It's like you have a major windstorm or a tornado or something, you're going to tie down your furniture. It doesn't fucking matter. That shit's going to go flying whether you like it or not. It doesn't matter what you do if it's strong enough. As I'm trying to take notes on what just happened here, here comes Sting off the top rope. Sting with a top rope dive out on to all the heels on the floor, takes them down. And this is only in the first 15 seconds of the match. From the moment the bell rang, this was not even, I don't think, 15 seconds into this match. Darby and Sting have already done dives out to the floor. We haven't even gotten to Jeff Hardy yet. Remember what I said on the podcast on Sunday? When I was previewing this show and I mentioned this match and I said, you know, Sting at Revolution was the crazy one. He's the one who did the balcony dive. Now you add Jeff Hardy to the match. This is going to be Jeff's night to do something fucking crazy. Did I not say that on Sunday? Well, we'll get to that in a little bit. So Sting was going nuts here. He had his Stinger splash to Isaiah Cassidy against the barricade outside. This was basically like the Revolution match in that all the action just branched out. There's no rules. Everybody can pretty much just do whatever they want until one person gets the win. So they all fanned out across different parts of the building. You know, they were brawling up on the ramp and the stage. They were brawling around the ringside area. They made their way into the crowd, up into the stands. So Darby is in the crowd, and he's with the Butcher. And I believe he's on the Butcher's, I almost said the bitches, the Butcher's back. Okay, now they're over by one of the tunnels where the fans enter from. I don't know what level, maybe the 200 level, wherever they are at this point. And he's on the Butcher's back. And here's Andrade whipping Darby across the back with his leather belt. And Butcher then grabs Darby in a powerbomb position and kind of lowers him. And, you know, we've seen him and other people do this before where you get your opponent and you start swinging them back and forth into the barricade. Only here, they were in the crowd. You have the tunnel and you have the railings on each side, and he is just wailing away on Darby, swinging him back and forth, whipping him back here on one side into the other against the metal railing. And then he basically powerbombs him. He dumps him down a concrete flight of stairs. And that is how they went into the break. That's a hell of a way to dive on into a commercial break. Literally a break is what we went to at this point in the match. And by the way, yes, I see Marcus and other people have mentioned this as well. I think I made a comment about this last week. The Butcher does look different. And the reason the Butcher looks different, he has slimmed down. It is noticeable. Everybody was so busy talking about Chris Jericho and his amazing physical transformation. You got to give the Butcher some credit, too. This guy is a lot slimmer than he was even a few months ago. So whatever he, I don't know what he weighed 6 months ago. He could have been 260 for all I know. If he was 260, maybe now he's 230. You know, he's still a big dude. But yes, it is not your imagination. He has definitely slimmed down. He is not Skinner. He is skinnier. Who said that? That is not Skinner. He is skinnier. After the break, we cut to the stage, and Matt Hardy is with Isaiah Cassidy. And Isaiah Cassidy is basically begging for his life. Matt is setting up for a side effect. He's going to give this kid a side effect off the stage. Here comes Mark Quinn from behind. He low blows Matt Hardy. And we end up getting a private party double team. They each grab a hold of Matt, and they give Matt a side effect, a double team side effect, off the stage, down through what I believe were two tables on the floor. So Matt Hardy and Private Party have now crashed and burned. And so that takes care of them for a while. We cut back to the concourse. We are now inside the arena where the concessions are and the merch stands and everything. We're on the concourse of the building. It's still daylight because it's Texas. Now, this was probably, 8:30 Eastern time? So it's only 5:30, maybe 6:30. 5:30, I don't know. What's the time zone? Austin, Texas. Are they 2 hours behind us or three? I think two. Anyway, it's still light outside. And they're brawling in the concourse. Sting and Darby, they have the Butcher and the Blade laid out across two tables. And Sting is trying his damnedest to hold these guys down, and he's looking for Jeff. Now, Jeff Hardy has, of course, a giant ladder, because why the fuck wouldn't he? Why wouldn't he have a giant ladder? I can only imagine if Jeff Hardy is sent by his wife for some sort of a Home Depot run or a Lowe's or an Ace Hardware. He's got to go to the store and buy something. He can't walk into a store like that without grabbing a ladder and climbing it. It's just, it's his nature. He can't help himself. So Sting looks over, he sees Jeff, and he's waiting for Jeff to set up the ladder. He's pointing at him, go ahead, let's go. He's trying to hold these guys down. Jeff has a giant ladder, and he sets the ladder up, and he sets it up almost like against the wall. Like, he opens it up, but it's close to the wall. He climbs the ladder, and I would say he had to be every bit of maybe 15 feet up. There's a small ledge that's part of the wall. And it's just deep enough where he can climb up there and stand on this little itty-bitty ledge. And so, of course, we all knew what was coming next. It was pretty obvious what was coming next. I mean, this guy has not even been on television. He's not been under contract in AEW for a full 3 weeks. He's already scaling parts of the building like fucking Spider-Man. And so Jeff is standing up on this ledge, and he follows that up with a monster Swanton Bomb down through both tables, down through the Butcher, down through the Blade. Jeff Hardy is laying in a heap. Can't help himself. He cannot help himself. Sting goes over and checks on him, and he motions to him that, you know what, I'm going to go back into the arena. Are you okay? Because I'm going to leave. And off goes Sting. He's going back to the battlefield. He's got to go and take the battle back out into the building, back out into the ring. And so off goes Sting. Now, Sting got to the ring awfully quick. As I think back on this now, Sting was, it's almost like he teleported himself back to the ring. I don't know. It just feels to me like, I'm sure that portion of the match wasn't taped because you had fans that were there. That would be tough to do. But although it could have been, I suppose. But anyway, Sting was back in the ring in no time. And he fights off Private Party. He goes to check on Matt. So he's keeled over looking to make sure Matt Hardy is okay. And here comes, I think it was Mark Quinn. Hits him across the back with a chair. Well, we know chairs have no effect on Sting. FTR found that out months ago on television, right? Sting has been hit before with a chair. And he brushes it off and no-sells it. He turns around, the place pops. He does the big Sting fire-up spot. He's pounded his chest, you know, he's doing the whole Sting thing. And he gives each member of Private Party a Stinger Splash. He gives one to Mark Quinn. He gives one to Isaiah Cassidy in the other corner. Sting decides he's going to give Mark Quinn a third Stinger Splash. But he moves out of the way, and Sting goes face first into the top turnbuckle. So both members of Private Party perch Sting up on the top, and they're going to go for gin and juice. And when Sting comes off the rope, you've seen Gin and Juice before, you know one member of Private Party jumps up, They take with like a Rana and they take Sting or whoever the opponent is off the top into a cutter. Well, as Sting comes off the top rope, the idea, they tried. They were going to try something. He was to have come off the top rope, land on his feet, the idea was, and he would grab Isaiah Cassidy in position for the Scorpion Death Drop. It would be like a smooth transition where Sting would come off, he would land on his feet, grab Isaiah, and have him hooked. Didn't quite work out that way. Now, keep in mind, Sting is 63. I think, actually, is today, tomorrow, I think. I believe tomorrow is Sting's birthday. Am I thinking of The Undertaker? I might be thinking of I know tomorrow is The Undertaker's birthday. Or is it Friday? I think it's tomorrow. Anyway, happy early birthday to The Undertaker, who's going to be about, 4,000 years old. But anyway, Sting is a 62, I believe, soon to be 63-year-old man. And I think that was asking a bit much to expect that he would land on his feet and it would go as smoothly as they probably wanted it to be. So he fell down, and the problem is this. The reason why this looked a little wonky, he grabbed a hold of Isaiah Cassidy, and of course it didn't work out, and so he kind of fell down, but he held on to him, and he wouldn't let go, and he was still trying to get up, but he couldn't get back up quick enough. And so it kind of looked bad, and I'm just watching this because this was rough, and I'm thinking to myself, just let him go. Just let him go, get up, and pick him up. I don't know why he didn't just let go and get back to his feet and pick the kid back up. Eventually, though, Sting did make it back to his feet. He got upright, and it actually worked out okay. Because once Sting got back up to his feet, he looked over at Matt Hardy, who had the other member of Private Party, Ed Mark Quinn, I believe it was, in position for, I guess it would have been a side effect, I guess. And Sting pointed at Matt pointed at Sting, and they each hit their finishers simultaneously at the exact same time. So they saved it in the end. In the end, it looked fine, and Matt got the pin to win it for the babyfaces. This was craziness, as you would expect, the moment they announced this match, and you had Darby Allin, Sting, and Jeff Hardy in this match. All three of them have done crazy shit in a lot of their AEW matches, or in Jeff's case, in his career. This was Jeff's first chance to do something crazy in AEW. I mean, he felt left out, right? He seems to be a big Darby Allin fan. When you hear Jeff Hardy in interviews talk about Darby, you can tell he wants to work with him in the worst way. And I said, it's only a matter of time. We're going to get a Jeff Hardy-Darby Allin match. Sting, he's probably seen Sting do crazy things before. He's like, I got to get in on this. What can I do? Oh, I know. I'll climb 20 feet up a ladder. I'll climb out onto the ledge, and I'll do a swanton in the merch area. This was fun. I enjoyed this. Even though we got, basically, it was a carbon copy of what we saw at Revolution. But I enjoyed this. And thankfully, it doesn't look like anybody got hurt, which is always something I worry about in matches like this. So apparently, I'm being told that Sting turned 63 on Sunday. So I knew his birthday was around this period somewhere. So he is 63. Undertaker turns 57 years old tomorrow. Can you believe that Sting, Mr. Stink, is older than The Undertaker? I think the makeup helps make him look younger than he is, but I don't know, he looks younger, he's moving around a lot better, it seems, than The Undertaker is, and he's older. Sting's taking good care of himself over the years. Good for him. We have Bryan Danielson and Jon Moxley with William Regal back out on commentary for the second straight week against the Varsity Blondes, Brian Pillman Jr., and Griff Garrison. Julia Hart still sporting her stylish eye patch from when she was misted in the face by Malakai Black many months ago, was sitting on the ring steps during the match for the Blondes, not even paying attention. She looked generally disinterested. I don't know if this is the beginning of a heel turn. Sure seems that way. So she just sat on the ring steps the whole time, her back turned, just looking out at the crowd and just looking like she didn't want to be there. When asked about Wheeler Yuta on commentary, Regal said that he wants people who have the right ideals and the right spirit. That's what he's looking for. He said that's what the company and this industry needs more of. This match did not go very long. The Blondes got very little offense in before the finish. It was really all about the beatdown at the very end. That was the most fun part of this entire thing. Danielson landed the running knee to Garrison. Moxley dropped Pillman with the paradigm shift. There were rapid fire forearms on the mat by John Moxley in one part of the ring and in the other part of the ring at the same time that Moxley was raining down blows upon his opponent. Danielson was laying in the stomps and he was stomping away on Pillman's head. Moxley then locked the bulldog choke on Griff Garrison for the submission win. After the match, shout out, by the way, to Hulkling93 for that $10 super chat. Again, I'll be reading your messages here in just a little bit. After the match, Regal walked down to the ring. He got into the ring to join his team, and Moxley got the microphone. Last week it was Regal we heard from. Now it was going to be John Moxley. Now it was his turn. Maybe next week we'll hear from Brian Danielson. In fact, I'm almost positive. Next week, we'll hear from Brian Danielson. So Moxley said that he's a lucky man, he's blessed, and that he has been able to compete against the best in the world. I love how he referred to Regal as Lord Regal. Every time he mentioned him, it was Lord Regal, my lord. He said Lord Regal is the only man whose opinion he's ever cared about. He called the seal of approval from Regal a badge of honor. Moxley put over Brian Danielson as the perfect wrestler. He said they were forged in combat. Moxley said that anybody who thinks they have what it takes to ride with the three of them needs to reach deep down and find that place where you love pain. He said the only way to get a badge of honor from the Blackpool Combat Club is to earn it the hard way. So there it is. We have a name. We have an official name. Remember what I called them a few weeks ago? I called them Fight Club. And I figured they could come up with something a little more original than that. But that was kind of the idea that I was going for. And the name isn't too far removed from the whole Fight Club concept. They're being called the Blackpool Combat Club. BCC. Better than BBC. I like it. I really like that name. The Blackpool Combat Club. The Blackpool Combat Club needs some new members, too. So hopefully in time they'll recruit a couple of new people. Expand the group a little bit, but I like that name. MJF was out next in the ring. He had an army of security geeks guarding the ringside area to protect him from Wardlow after he and Sean Spears screwed Wardlow out of the TNT Championship last week. He addressed Wardlow first, saying that it was a shame that he couldn't win the TNT title. He really was going to let Wardlow keep the title. As he said previously, remember he had said, look, Wardlow, I'm going to let you keep that title when you win it. Of course, that was before what happened to Revolution. But he said, you just weren't good enough to beat Scorpio Sky. And then he briefly turned his attention to CM Punk. He accused Punk of cheating to win in their match and said that they would meet again at some point. Yes, they will. Yes, they will. And if you've listened to these podcasts and these streams, you know that they will meet again, and when they meet again, it should be MJF beating CM Punk to win the AEW World Championship. He said even then it won't be over between them until he attends Punk's funeral and pisses on his grave. He told Wardlow he was going to start calling him Pig, because that's exactly what he is, a greedy little pig. He said that if it wasn't for him, the people would not even know who the hell he is. He goes, he made him. He put a nice roof over his head, him and his mother, implying, I guess, that Wardlow, I guess he's sharing the same home as his mother, or maybe he bought his mother a home. I assume they're sharing a home together. Maybe he's got so much money. Maybe he built her a little, you know, like a little outhouse in the back or something. You know, Mama Wardlow lives in the back of the house. He slips her food under the door like Sloth in the Goonies. Just slide the tray right under the door. I could picture Wardlow's mother strapped to the chair like Sloth. I kid. Wardlow, I'm sure Wardlow's mother is a fine woman. I'm sure she is a lovely lady. I will not compare her to Sloth. That's right. Miguel in the chat says, I was right. MJF is Vince and Wardlow is Mustafa Ali. That's exactly what I said. Don't doubt me. When I say things, don't doubt. I don't say them just to hear myself talk. I say them for a reason. Remember, 12-0 at Revolution in my predictions. So he said, I did all of this for you and your mother. And how do you repay me? By costing me the most important match of my life. And then to ask me after that to release you from your contract. He said, Wardlow didn't sign some fakakta deal with some schmuck. He signed a deal with the devil and it's ironclad. Because you thought you had it bad before. He said he's going to strap Wardlow to a cross like Jesus. And that, of course, got heel heat. They were in Texas. And so that guy, well, that'll probably get him heel heat anywhere, but especially in the South. And that got him a lot of boos from the crowd. He said if he deems it fit to kick that skank mother of his out of his house, he's not going to say a thing because he owns him. He goes, I own you, pig. What was that quote from Babe? Was it, that'll do? Right? That'll do, Pig. That'll do. So that brought out Wardlow. No music. He just has a very serious look on his face. He's storming down to the ring. He knocked down some of the security guards, and the others managed to restrain him, and MJF said that you don't work for AEW, you work for me. And he said, I don't want you around here anymore. That means that you're trespassing, just like all these marks if they were to hop over the barricade, which is stupid to say. All you're doing is inviting trouble by doing that. I'm not even sure why he would bring that up. I mean, I know why he would bring that up, but I would imagine Tony Khan could do without any other morons taking him up on that, because you know there's some dumbasses in the crowd who are going to be like, oh, well, MJF challenged me, so I guess I should go ahead and do it. There's always going to be some moron out there. I don't know why you would want to tempt fate like that. He said he's going to keep paying Wardlow, but he's going to pay him to sit home. He's going to pay him to sit home like fucking Turner did with all the top WCW stars in 2001 when the company went under. Kevin Nash sat on his couch, and Hogan and Goldberg and all these people. Eventually, they all came in. Unfortunately, by then, it was too late. He's going to pay Wardlow to sit at home. Until all of these people forget that you even exist. They're not going to remember your name. You're going to be gone for so long. You're going to go, just like you were when I first found you. An absolute nobody. He goes, now go play in the mud, pig. Go play in the mud. That's what I say to the trolls online. I say, go play in the mud, pig. Go play in the mud. So as the security geeks backed up Wardlow, and he agreed to leave, he said, get your hands off me, I'll leave. So they backed him away, and off went Wardlow. We never saw him again. MJF turned his attention to a nasty little rumor that the Pinnacle might be through, but he goes, that could not possibly be further from the truth. Starting next week with FTR in action, we are moving on up around here. And then Sean Spears ended the promo by saying, when you're in the Pinnacle, you're always on top. I don't know what that means as far as Tully Blanchard, because FTR fired him. He was technically part of the Pinnacle. I guess he's not anymore. But it just seems to me like we're going to get FTR breaking away from the Pinnacle, and that'll be another step in solidifying their babyface turn. So I would watch for that next week. I also, by the way, look forward to the debut of a new giant machine under a mask on television. Just like a giant machine from all those years ago, we're going to get Wardlow under a mask. What was Dusty Rhodes in the NWA when he left and he was supposed to be, you know, banned or whatever, and he came back under a mask? He was the Midnight Rider. We have to come up with a name that Wardlow could use. Can't use Midnight Rider, Giant Machine. Those have been taken. What can we call Wardlow? What's Wardlow backwards? We'll call him that. But that's how I figure we'll end up with Wardlow back on TV. The Best Friends were backstage. We had a quick backstage segment here. And they were asked about Wheeler Yuta's interactions with William Regal last week. Trent stopped him. He stopped all the talking. And he told Yuta that, I never liked you. He basically tolerated him because the others took him in and they were friendly to him and they liked him, but I never liked you. These guys trained you. They let you lay on the couch. This is how you repay them. He goes, I'm done with you. And Wheeler said, look, I love Orange Cassidy. I love these guys. But I never liked you either. And he said, I'm not trying to be the best friend I can be. I'm trying to be the best wrestler. You either get that or you don't. So that pretty much, I think, spells the end of Wheeler Yuta with Best Friends. And to go back to what Jon Moxley was saying in his promo earlier, what Regal said on commentary tonight, Looks like Wheeler Yuta may end up as part of the Blackpool Combat Crew, or whatever the fuck they're calling themselves. I already forgot the name. The Blackpool Combat Crew, is that what it is? It looks like Yuta may be linking up with them after all. So I like that. Like I said, they need to add a couple of young guns in there. Next up, Midnight Warden. Warden is too close to Wardlow. Beowulf. I would imagine they probably can't copyright that. Right? Or is that Beowulf? Beowulf, they wouldn't be able to use. Mr. Dynamite, there you go. That could work. The Pig. Man-Bear-Pig. Oh, there you go. Man-Bear-Pig. Now, does Warner Media own Comedy Central? Does Warner Media have any ownership stake in South Park? Because they might be able to actually use that name. We can call him Man-Bear-Pig. I vote for Man-Bear-Pig. Next up was the battle between two former Ring of Honor world champions. We had Adam Cole one-on-one against Jay Lethal. Jay Lethal hit the consecutive suicide dives that he usually does in his matches. He does them in rapid succession. I think he pretty much peeled off two of them. And before he could go for a third, Cole sidestepped and he walked around to the other side of the ring. And Lethal came through the ropes and hit him there. Actually brushed up against the cameraman. He just kind of zipped outside from out of nowhere and took down Adam Cole. This was going into the commercial break. Red Dragon came out right before the break. We saw them coming out. Back from the break, Lethal tried twice for a figure four leg lock. He finally got it on the third attempt. Cole managed to make the ropes for a break. There was a distraction from Red Dragon that allowed Cole to roll up Lethal for a two count. Lethal then countered the boom into a cutter. That was cool. So now we got loud dueling chants of let's go Lethal Adam Cole. Let's go Lethal Adam Cole. Let's go Lethal Adam Cole. And so the crowd is into the opening match as they were with Punk and Harwood. They were big time into this match. This was... to me, we know Adam Cole is over with the crowd. They like him. They like his music. They do the bay-bay and they do the boom and the crowds respond. Say what you want to about Adam Cole. The crowds respond to him. And they responded in a big way tonight to Jay Lethal as well. And so you got the dueling chants and you got the big reactions to the near falls and you got the this is awesome chants and all that stuff. This was a great match. Cole reversed the Lethal injection with a super kick to the back of Lethal's head out of midair. So as Lethal is hitting the ropes and coming off of the Lethal injection, Cole nailed him right in the back of the skull with a super kick. A great counter, followed up with the Panama Sunrise for a very close near fall. Lethal avoided the boom and rolled up Cole, but Red Dragon distracted the referee. So Lethal got the visual pin, but not the actual pin. And Cole countered the Lethal injection that he went for again with a low blow. So this time, as Lethal came off the ropes, he actually, it was a little weird. You could tell he was going for something different. He did a little jump. Like as he bounced off the ropes, he kind of jumped up into the air, and that gave Cole the space he needed to deliver the low blow, and then he lowered the boom for the win. After the match was over, Cole grabbed the microphone, said nobody deserves the AEW World Championship more than he does. He said Hangman Page is scared of him. And so, of course, out comes the cowboy. Here comes Hangman Page. Marches down to the ring. He whipped all three heels with his leather belt, but Cole caught him with a low blow. They beat him down. Jungle Boy, Luchasaurus, and Christian Cage ran out to make the save, and Cole left with the AEW Championship belt over his shoulder. And I will tell you, I mean, he looked good with the belt. I'm not saying he didn't, but I will tell you that that belt is almost as big as Adam Cole is. It's a big belt. I mean, it's a giant championship belt. And yes, it did take up his entire shoulder and part of his chest. But anyway, I hope that this match is Exhibit A. I hope this match is Exhibit A in why we need to see more of Jay Lethal, why he needs to be featured on this show more often than he is. Instead of being relegated to dark duty every week and the occasional Rampage, we need to get more Jay Lethal on this show. But I'm kind of thinking that he may end up back in Ring of Honor before all is said and done, because Tony Khan is going to need some names in Ring of Honor, and he could always bring in a Samoa Joe or a Cesaro or somebody like that who's got the ROH connection. But, you know, look, if he's not going to do anything with him on Dynamite, maybe he should be one of the main faces in a relaunched Ring of Honor. But this was a really, really fun match. Great stuff here from Adam Cole and Jay Lethal. No real surprise. I mean, look who we're talking about. We're talking about Jay Lethal, a 20-year vet, multiple-time Ring of Honor world champion. We know what his credentials are. We've seen him in Impact. We've seen him in ROH. I've seen him in House of Glory. I just called his match a month ago. The guy is fucking great. We know what Adam Cole could do. You put the two of them in the ring together and you end up with a match like this. But I don't think we get to see him enough on television. Yeah, he's a big enough name where he should at least be featured on their main show more often than he is. So back from break, Tony Schiavone is in the ring, and he is in the ring with the now former TNT champion Sammy Guevara and his significant other, Ty Conti. Sammy said he doesn't have the TNT title anymore, but he does have this ring. And he will always put on a great show for the fans when he is out there in that ring. He's always doing crazy shit. He brought up, you know, loving the holy shit chants, and they started chanting holy shit at him. He knows he can't do this forever. He says it'll catch up to him. He'll pay for it when he's older. And if he's going to pay for it, he says, screw it. It's worth it. And I just laughed and I said, let's see in 20 years if he says the same thing. They all say that when they're in their 20s. We hear the vets talk about this all the time. You're in your mid-20s, your early 20s, your late 20s. You're invincible. You're bulletproof. You're making a name for yourself. So you're going to do the crazy shit. And you're going to do all these insane dives and everything that these guys do, paying no mind to how they're going to feel 20 or 25 years from now. So he says that now. I don't think he's going to be saying the same thing 20 years from now. So he said he and Conti want payback, and Ty spoke some Portuguese that she then translated. She said Paige Van Zandt would get her ass kicked just like she did in her MMA career, which is true. And she ended up doing what she's doing now, which is the bare-knuckle fights that she does. I don't know that she's faring much better in the bare-knuckle fights, but Dan Lambert, Ethan Page and Scorpio Sky walked out on stage. Lambert had the interim TNT belt around his waist. He called Paige Van Zandt the biggest free agent signing in AEW history. I think Keith Lee would like a word with you and all the other free agents they've signed. They'd like to have a conversation with Dan Lambert about what he said there. She wasn't there, he said, because she doesn't need to appear in shit-stained towns like Austin. Said, if your parents give you an extra $9.99 a month, you can subscribe to Paige Van Zandt's fan page and find out why Orange Cassidy keeps his hands in his pockets all day long. Well, now we know. He's got sticky fingers. He talked about Scorpio Sky, saying he hasn't lost a match since Tony Khan reached puberty last year. That's a good one. I like that line. Have you heard Tony Khan cut a promo, or I should say shout a promo on television? I think that's a shoot. I don't know that he hit puberty until sometime around spring of last year. He called Ty Conti Lucha Horus, said that they have no interest in wrestling these two, and so they declined their offer for a match. Lambert, somewhere in here, he took off his TNT title, and he kissed it. And Sammy told Lambert that, you know, I know that we've been living rent-free in your head for a while now, but if only you knew what Ty and I did while wearing that belt, you would know that we now live in your mouth as well. So I guess Dan Lambert's mouth is now a petri dish. And Ty Conti, by the way, for those of you horny little bastards out there, posted a photo on her Twitter during the show tonight to back up what they were talking about here. I was going to post it for you here on YouTube, but YouTube can be a little weird about these things, so I won't post it here. But if you go on her Twitter, she posted a bit of a risque photo of them laying in bed, and the only thing covering her nether regions is, in fact, the TNT Championship belt. I'm wondering who took the photo. Who the fuck was in the room that they were shooting them from across the room laying in bed together naked with the TNT top? Probably Fuego. Little fucking pervert. So anyway, that was pretty much the entire segment. Kind of a dumb segment, but I will say, you know, there, talking about, you know, worrying about what we did with the title when we had it. And it made me think of Miro. Because I miss Miro. I actually miss Miro being on TV, and I know he was hurt. I don't know if he's healed up and they're just waiting for an idea for him, or if he's still nursing an injury. I think it was a leg injury, maybe a quad or a hamstring. But, you know, he's been off television for so long, but you know damn well. You know damn well that Miro, when he was the TNT champion, that he and Lana were doing the dirty deeds on that belt. All the weeks he would come out on television and thank God for his hot wife and how flexible my hot wife is. You know fucking well that they were doing the, you know, bumping uglies on that TNT title left and right every single week. They were doing it in the bedroom. They were doing it on the patio. They were doing it on the kitchen table. They were doing it in their car. They were doing it in the street. They were doing it in their pool. They were doing it in their neighbor's pool. This is nothing compared to what those two were probably doing. That whole neighborhood is probably a crime scene. Anyway, hopefully we'll see Miro back on TV very soon. Will we get Miro first or Veer? That is the question. I know they said on Monday that Veer is coming on, I guess, the night after WrestleMania. But of course, as everybody has pointed out, they didn't give us a year. They said April 4th or whatever. They didn't say April 4th of what year. Are we going to get Miro back or Veer first? That's the question. We had legit Layla Hirsch one-on-one against Red Velvet with Chris Statlander barred from ringside. I like that, Joel. The Devil's Tango. I'm going to call it that from now on. The Devil's Tango. Hirsch attacked right away at the bell, knocked Velvet out to the floor. Velvet, though, came back, sent Layla into the barricade not once but twice on the third attempt. Layla countered and sent Velvet into the barricade, and they went back and forth ahead of the break. So they come back, and Velvet goes on offense. Hirsch countered a springboard attempt into a German suplex for two. Velvet came back with the iconoclasm for two of her own. It's usually a Chris Daniels thing. Velvet hit the mix kick, but Hirsch rolled out of the ring before she could cover her, and she grabbed the... Now, she has this turnbuckle that she's been using as a weapon on TV. The referee, though, got it out of her hand, wrestled it out of her hands. However, after doing so, we saw that Hirsch had a second turnbuckle. I guess it was in her tights or whatever, and she hit Red Velvet with it. Referee didn't see it, knocked her out, got the pin. After the match, Hirsch locked Velvet in the cross arm breaker that led to Chris Statlander running down, and off went Layla Hirsch. So, I'm not really, I can't really sit here and tell you this was anything exciting, but as somebody who I like Layla Hirsch's work. I mean, the turnbuckle stuff is just typical heel bullshit. So I'm glad at least that she's getting more TV time than Jay Lethal is. Layla Hirsch has been getting more television time. I can't say this is overly exciting stuff that she's doing, but at least she's getting more television time. We go backstage. Jade Cargill is back there with Smart Mark Sterling to be interviewed by Tony Schiavone. And Jade wants to talk about after she goes 30-0, because she's about to, I think her next match, I believe, she is going to go 30-0 if she wins in her AEW career. And she wants to have a huge celebration. She wants green everything. She wants green confetti, green Lamborghini, you know, something better than Thunder Rosa. She mentioned Thunder Rosa and the fact that she beat her. She actually beat her in the TBS title tournament en route to winning in the finals. And I thought that was very interesting. She said they need fine exotic dancers, and they need, of course, every good party needs exotic dancers. I mean, come on. Otherwise, what's the point in even going? Why waste my time without them? But that Thunder Rosa mention was very interesting. I can't see a champion against champion scenario. Not yet. I mean, to do any kind of a match like that or, you know, winner take all, way too early. I mean, they just introduced the championship, this TBS title a few months ago. I would keep them apart. I don't know if that's what they're going for here. And probably not because of what happened in the next segment. Rosa is off doing something else, but it would be way, 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 way too premature to even think about doing something like that. Speaking of Thunder Rosa, the new AEW Women's Champion, she was out next. She came out on stage with Tony Schiavone for a celebrate what was supposed to be a celebration of her AEW Championship win last week. She was quickly interrupted by Vicky Guerrero with her shrill screaming, which is so, I mean, it still gets heel heat. I'm not going to say that it doesn't, but I am so over the excuse me bullshit. I'm so done with it. I'm so done with it. So out she comes with the excuse me stuff, and she says, Rosa is a fake Texan, and they argued about her green card and her American citizenship before Nyla Rose attacked Thunder Rosa from behind. This sucked. I have no interest in seeing Nyla Rose going back after the AEW Women's Championship. I have no interest in seeing Vicky Guerrero coming out and doing her excuse me or any of this bullshit. I have no interest, zero interest in seeing that. If that's the idea for Nyla and Thunder Rosa to lock horns, hopefully it's a quick one and done for Thunder Rosa to give her somebody to beat on TV before she moves on to whoever her next real challenger is going to be. Whoever that is, I think I floated Serena Deeb's name maybe as a potential opponent for Double or Nothing. I'd love to see that. Hopefully Nyla is a speed bump en route to whoever that person is going to be, because this I have no interest in. The main event. And by the way, I don't know where they're going. It might have just been a one-night thing, this stuff about the green card and her citizenship and all that. I don't need to be hearing about that bullshit either. I don't know where they were going with that, but I have no interest in this. So the main event was Chris Jericho and Daniel Garcia, the in-ring debut of the Jericho Appreciation Society, taking on John Silver and Alex Reynolds of the Dark Order. John Silver, on Monday, went on Twitter, he went on maybe Instagram too, he went on social media, and he posted a photo that looks to be, I don't know, 12... 13, 15 years ago, maybe, that he took at an autograph signing when he met Chris Jericho. And so he said, it's going to be really great to get in the ring with Chris Jericho after all these years and to beat him live on television. Well, it didn't quite work out that way for Johnny Hungy here, although he did out-wrestle Jericho at the start of the match. And Silver and Reynolds hit this ridiculous tope suicida brainbuster combo to Jericho out on the floor. This is kind of wild here. Jericho then kicked the ring steps loudly, and he acted as if the other members of the Dark Order who were outside the ring had attacked him. He pulled an Eddie Guerrero. And so that got the attention of Aubrey Edwards, who then ejected, she bought it, and she ejected the Dark Order members from ringside, heading into the final break. We come back from break. Jericho goes for a lion salt. Reynolds rolls out of the way, and Jericho misses. And Reynolds gets to Silver for the hot tag. And John Silver has one of the best hot tags in AEW. He just runs absolutely wild like a madman when he tags in. And the place ate it up. Place came alive for John Silver here. He tags in. He takes all the heels out on the floor. He takes out 2.0, which I know they're not 2.0 anymore, but they're still 2.0 to me. So he takes out 2.0. He takes out Jake Hager. Hager goes down a little, not smoothly, but he did go down. Kind of like that beer I had the other day. So John Silver then gets back up onto the apron. He climbs back into the ring, but he gets caught by Jericho with a code breaker. But he kicks out. Near fall only. Jericho doesn't use the code breaker anymore as a finish. So Daniel Garcia got into the match. Reynolds got a blind tag, and the Dark Order hit this tandem offense that we see them doing in their matches. It ended up with a jackknife pin for a very close, I'm talking 2.999 near fall on Daniel Garcia. Main event Garcia, by the way, just hit me. can we add this to the list? Main event Garcia strikes again here on this show. Unbelievable. So Jake Hager was to have been taken out by John Silver yet again. John Silver went to the well one too many times on Jake Hager. Hager caught him, though, on a tope suicida, and he slammed him down onto the floor. and he put Silver back into the ring. Well, actually, no, he left him on the floor. It was Reynolds. It was Reynolds. Garcia had the referee distracted. It was Reynolds who hit the ropes, not Silver. When John, I'm mixing them up. I'm calling him John Reynolds now. When Alex Reynolds hit the ropes, Jericho was outside. There we go. And he had Floyd the baseball bat. The referee didn't see this. And he whacked Reynolds in the back with the baseball bat. And Garcia then slapped on a deep sharpshooter for the submission win. Can we just call today Bret Hart Appreciation Day? I mean, at this point, we may as well. Second sharpshooter of the night. And he won with it. Daniel Garcia picks up the win for the Jericho Appreciation Society. I say that we call today Bret Hart Appreciation. Actually, every day is Bret Hart Appreciation Day. Why should it be limited to just one day? Every day should be Bret Hart Appreciation Day. So I thought this was a really good show. It fell off quite a bit for me in those last 20 minutes or so. I mean, I enjoyed the John Silver comeback, but the last 25 or so minutes of the show cannot compare to what we got in the first half. From the opening match, the Texas Tornado match, which I just thought was, it was just a fun brawl. But then also later on, the Adam Cole and the Jay Lethal match. Really, really great stuff on this show. Plenty of stuff to find, I think, to your liking, even if you didn't like the last half of the show. Rampage this Friday night is back in its regular time slot, which means we'll be reviewing it live on the air Friday night along with SmackDown, back to business. We've got Dustin Rhodes one-on-one against Lance Archer. We have Red Dragon taking on Allen Angels and Preston Vance of the Dark Order. Nyla Rose will be in action. We've got Hook getting his certificate of accomplishment from QT Marshall. I thought we were done with this. I thought we were done with this, but apparently not. And Ricky Starks one-on-one against Swerve Strickland for the FTW Championship. That is on Rampage on Friday night. And next week on Dynamite, Darby Allin one-on-one against Andrade El Idolo, and FTR takes on the Gun Club. So there you go. See, I don't say it as fast as Excalibur, because I want you to actually hear me and understand what I'm saying. But let's go to the poll. Let's see what you guys are saying in the poll. 83% thumbs up and roughly 17% thumbs down. With just under 1,000 votes in so far. So, at Solomonster. That is my handle on Twitter if you want to vote in these things. Or shoot me a message. At Solomonster is my handle on Twitter as I scan the chat here to see what all you guys are talking about. Send Hook says Tundar. What's going on? Tundar the Argonian. Maybe we can call Wardlow Tundar the Argonian. How about that? the surviving Rhodes brother in AEW, says Tuxedo T. Servo. Yes, he is the last of the Rhodes. He's the last of the Rhodes. When he's gone, Tony Khan will stand there and say, where we're going with this company, we don't need Rhodes. Let's go to your super chats. Hang out here for a little bit. If you have questions, comments about the show tonight, anything at all, send them on in. I do appreciate your support. You'll see them popping up on your screen there. I added a few new ones that will pop up randomly. We had some from earlier, actually, during the watch-along. Had a lot of fun. Again, really fun watch-along earlier for the submission match from WrestleMania. Amiibo Guru, you get the first word here with the Super Chats tonight. Juan, why is your Twitter handle blurred out? I don't know. Because the Twitter poll is showing differently. Now, remember I couldn't get it to work a week ago? I think I was logged out or whatever, so I got it to work, and then for whatever reason, the top part is blurred out, but again, you know my handle. I mention it every week. At Solomon's. Just check the description. It's all down there. All my social media, it's all down in the description. Everything is down in the description. Where do you go? Down where? Down here. Amiibo, sending love from Cancun. Oh, I'm fucking jealous. Oh, it's been 6 years since I was in Cancun. I was at an all-inclusive resort. I do miss those days. Getting married Saturday and here until Wednesday. Missing AEW sucks, but at least I don't have to watch Raw. Also, what are your thoughts on the Yokozuna Bret Hart WrestleMania 10 finish? Well, congratulations to Amiibo. He is getting hitched, and he is in Cancun enjoying the sun. And Cancun has, from what I understand, the second largest, I think, barrier reef in the world. At least that's what we were told. I went snorkeling in the barrier reef, which was an amazing experience. And they told all of us, when we got off the boat, to go into the water. They told all of us, they said, just whatever you do, just make sure you don't step on the reef. You know, because you don't want to damage it, and, you know, I think the reef is already in a lot of trouble as it is. Climate change and all that stuff. So, what's one of the first things I did? I went out into the water. I got panicked. Here's what happened, real quick. I got panicked because the water was sort of carrying me out away from the rest of our group. So, you know, the girl I was with and all the old people, all the old couples that were there, and it was like a group of 20 of us. They're going in one direction, and I'm kind of drifting off. I'm not that big of a guy. And it's kind of carrying me off. Now, I have my life vest on, but I'm starting to freak out. So I'm trying to, like, doggy paddle my way back to everybody. I stomped all over the fucking I didn't even realize what I was doing. I'm like, what is this bumpy shit that I'm stepping on? And then I kind of looked under the water. All this colorful reef, and I'm just, like, stomping all over, like fucking Godzilla. I'm stomping all over it. But it was beautiful before I stepped on it. A beautiful reef, and you see all the little blue fish swimming around, and yeah, one day I would love to go back. But from what I understand, Cancun is not exactly super safe right now. So be careful. They go after the tourists. What are my thoughts on that finish, though? Yoko and Bret Hart, WrestleMania 10, not a fan of that finish. Not a fan of that match, honestly. I like the WrestleMania 9 match better. And I think they had a match on Raw, I think that same year, or maybe the following. No, I think it was the same year. I was not really a fan of that match, and I was not a fan of that finish. I always thought it was very goofy, even when I was younger, that Yokozuna goes up for the Banzai Drop, and then he gets... Something spooks him. Did he see a mouse? Did he look off into the crowd and see a ghost? I don't know. And he just falls off. He wiggles his feet. He's laying there. And that's how the match ends. And Bret covers him and pins him. And that's how the match ends. And I always thought that was a very weak way of finishing the match. I think it would have been much better, and it would have made more of a statement for Bret to win with the sharpshooter. The year before WrestleMania, he got Yokozuna in the sharpshooter. He wrapped those big tree trunk legs up, and he did put the sharpshooter on there until Fuji threw salt in his face. So he could have gotten the move on him. And to have a big guy like that submit would have been a huge statement, I think, for Bret Hart. And instead, it was like he didn't beat Yokozuna. Yokozuna beat himself. He knocked himself silly, and Bret took advantage. I never really liked that finish. Not a fan. Samoan fan 101, thank you, brother, for the $2. He's a big fan of Thunder Rose. Loose Cannon with the $9.99. Loose Cannon Lopez joining us. Buy, sell, or rent on Bret Hart's best in-ring work in WWE? 1992, 1994, or 1997? Enjoyed the watch-along with Bret against Stone Cold. Thank you again for the great content. Well, I'm glad you enjoyed it, John, thank you very much. I gotta go 1994. He had some great matches in 92. 97 was maybe his best overall year, character-wise, promo-wise. But he missed a lot of time that year. He was hurt. He missed a few months. We all know what happened at the end of the year. So I can't put 97 over 94 in ring-wise. I would go buy a 94... Boy, in ring wise, though. If I vote against 97, I'm voting against that match we did the watch along for today. Ah, that's tough. But I'm going to buy a 94. I'm going to rent on 92 and sell on 97. Old Dirty Sausage, $10 super chat. About the first hour and a half of Dynamite, fired on all cylinders, the matches, the segments, even the crowd was hot, and then the Dan Lambert segment happened. Yeah, I don't want to say it went off a cliff. It just, the show, it never regained that level of excitement for me that it had at the beginning. Food Hive, $1.99. It was today Bret Hart Appreciation Day. Yes, it was. Jacob Donnelly, $5 Super Chat. Is the Blackpool Combat Club... Oh, I said Blackpool Combat Crew. I think I might like crew better. Is the Blackpool Combat Club the greatest name for a faction ever? Well, I always thought the Job Squad was kind of a good name. I don't know. Blackpool Combat Club is a great name. I don't know if I could call it best ever. I like Heart Foundation. I like... Oh, there was another one in WWE that I liked. It certainly wasn't Apple. Was that Apple on the SmackDown with the old... Oh, the core. What am I thinking of? Was there Apple? No, there was Apple. I think there was a... Wasn't there a faction called Apple with Santino and some other people? There was the core. Some truly awful fucking names. I will always pause for a good Fuck Bully Ray chant. That's from our boy Jared M. I will get to your super chat here in a little bit. Oh, the Beatdown Clan. That was right. That was from the TNA days, right? The Beatdown Clan. Eh, it was all right. Matt View, 72. Where are you? Disappointed Solomonster Super Chat, he says, is fitting, as it is disappointing that Cole against Lethal did not main event, and Blackpool Combat Club is a great name. Brian H. DeGreenboy with the $5 Super Chat. What's up, solo, buy or sell? Pre-Butch Pete Dunne versus Pac or Jushin Thunder Liger against Juventud Guerrera, both in their primes. It really depends on what style of match you're interested in. I mean, are you interested in more of the you know, high-flying cruiserweight or junior heavyweight style, lucha libre style? Are you more into... Yeah, I think of Pete Dunne. I don't really think of high flying so much. I think of more technical. I think of more submission and grappling based. I mean, I like both styles. So I would say of those two options that you have presented to me here, if I had to buy on just one over the other, I would probably buy on Dunne and Pac. Charlie Sanchez, $5 Super Chat. I'm just here for that slow babyface FTR turn. Hopefully we get that heel Bucks against babyface FTR down the line, maybe at Full Gear. Yeah, so the Bucks can beat them again. James Cooper, $9.99 Super Chat. Missed the show tonight, but glad to hear Solomonster. If Austin had come out of retirement for Punk, do you think they could have made a trilogy out of it if Austin was willing and healthy enough? Yeah, I mean, if he wanted to do it, and if the first match went well, yeah, they could have had two or three more matches if they wanted to. It really all depends on how that first match would have gone. He always said that if he was to come back, he felt like he had a good 2-year run left in him. This was 10 years ago. I don't think he would say the same thing at 57 years old today. But he used to say, yeah, I could come back and have a 2-year run, so... There's no reason to think that if he came back for a match with Punk and it went well, that there wouldn't at least be another one. Joseph Brooks, buy, rent, or sell. Who is the better transitional champion in WWE history? Iron Sheik, Ric Flair, or The Rock? I mean, that's a hard question to answer. I mean, who is the better? I mean, are you talking about in terms of the run they had or just who's the bigger name? I mean, that... I would say as far as the actual, you know, brief run that they had as champion, I'm trying to think, Flair? I mean, I guess you could consider Flair to be a transit. Yeah, he was a transitional champion. I was thinking of the first run, but more so the second one. He won the title in September. He lost it in October. And he didn't do anything in that month. So I wouldn't really consider that to be much of a great run. The Rock, I mean, everybody in the last 20 years, they win the championship so many times. I'm trying to think of which run you're even talking about. Are you talking about the last one? He won the title in July, lost it in August? Oh, man. I don't know. I probably would go with the Iron Sheik only because, you know, of what it led to. You know, Sheik winning that title is what kicked off Hulkamania, and that was such a big period for WWE. So, I mean, that's when I became a fan. Yeah, I was part of the whole Hulkamania boom in the mid-80s, so I'd probably go Sheik, Rock, and then put Flair last. Austin Runge. Again, and by the way, if we're talking about the second run that Flair had with the WWF title, which was shorter than the first one, then that's the order I would put it in. Austin Runge, $5 super chat. I got a feeling that MJF and Wardlow piggy thing is going to end up like that one scene in Deliverance. Yeah, maybe, or it'll end up in a hog pen match like Triple H had with Henry Godwin back at In Your House. We'll have a hog pen match with MJF being backdropped into the pen full of pig shit. Vince McMahon would love that. That is great shit, pal. Devin from NJ2000. $10 super chat. My dad says it is going to be Seth Rollins against Omos at WrestleMania, being that neither man has a clear direction heading into the show, and it's too late to build up Cody and Seth. What are your thoughts? Well, you can tell your dad that he's wrong. So that's number one. But your dad isn't wrong in that I had the same thought watching television on Monday night. How stupid is it that you have Omos on television talking about how he wants someone. He wants a singles match with somebody, right? Because he wants a WrestleMania match too. And Seth Rollins is on television now for the last 2 or 3 weeks, desperate to get on WrestleMania, all but begging for something to do at WrestleMania. And the announcers talk about it like, well, I guess he's got nothing to do. He's not going to go to WrestleMania. You've got a 7'4" guy on the show who's also now talking about wanting real competition. So wouldn't it make sense to just do... I'm not saying I want to see it. I'm just saying, wouldn't it make sense then, storyline-wise, for Rollins to go, hey, Omos, I'll take you on. At least that'll get me on the WrestleMania card. Doesn't make any fucking sense. But no, tell your father that he's wrong. The Mount Vernon kid, the Alpha. Man, the champs were chumps tonight. What do you think, Solomon Monster? Well, Hangman Page got left laying, right? He got hit in the dick. So he got left laying. Let's see. The TNT champion is Scorpio Sky. So he got off unscathed. Thunder Rosa got laid out. Jade Cargill didn't. The tag team champs did a run-in, but they didn't get their asses kicked. So, no, I wouldn't say champs were chumps. I didn't come away from tonight's show thinking that. So two of the champs got laid out to set up whatever their next match is going to be. Which I presume, you know, for Hangman Page and Adam Cole, I don't think that can be the match at Double or Nothing. You've got Battle of the Belts coming up on April 15th on a Friday night. Battle of the Belts 2. That is where you do the match between Hangman Page and Adam Cole for the championship. You need a bigger, fresher main event for Vegas. That's how you get Hangman Page and CM Punk. I think you do Hangman and Cole at Battle of the Belts. Liquid Sharingan, thank you for the $5 super chat. Monday Night Raw gave me ear and eye contusions. I will indefinitely be unable to watch Raw or SmackDown. Well, get well soon. Heal up and get well soon. I've had some of those eye contusions as well. Actually, I'm okay this week so far, but I'm a little scared because for the last probably 3 weeks, and it happens when I'm watching Raw, but not only when I'm watching Raw, but it's been happening with increased frequency lately. I have a twitch in my eye. In this eye, it will just start randomly twitching and I cannot stop it. I don't know if it's stress, I don't know what it is. I would like to blame Monday Night Raw, though, because a lot of times when I'm watching Raw these last few weeks, my eye will start twitching. It is uncontrollable. Like, I have to just shut my eye in order to get it to stop. And it's kind of pissing me off. But so far today, it's been okay. So Beowulf says that we are up to 255 likes. So we may not hit 300 before we go off here. That's going to make me very sad. Disappointed Solomonster. We can't hit 300 before we get out of here. Shin Akuma, $20 super chat. What's going on, Shin? Good to hear from you. Let's blame The Undertaker for starting the trend for pointing at the WrestleMania sign at the 2007 Royal Rumble. Yes, I agree. Let's blame The Undertaker. Remember what I said the other day? I got to get a WrestleMania sign. I got to put it behind me so that I can point to it at the beginning of every stream. Hulkling 93, $10 super chat. Ayo, move down on the RS to pin. Oh, he's talking about the 2K22 controls now. Great first hour and 15 of Dynamite. No backstage interruptions. Bad follow-up to Rose's big win. Oh, it was awful. Awful. That was an awful segment to follow up on Thunder Rose's win last week. He says, a program with Nyla feels obligatory now. Thoughts on Austin's punches. Austin had great punches. Again, we were just watching the match earlier today. Brett has great punches, and so does Austin. In fact, Austin would joke that some people would complain about how stiff his punches were. They were probably stiff. They looked real, and they probably were more real than anybody knew. So he had pretty good punches. As far as I've gotten a lot of feedback from you guys on what I was doing wrong on the gamer video when I was trying to pin my opponent and I couldn't. I did not know what I was doing. I have taken your advice, and I have spent a couple of extra hours playing the game, and I cannot pin any of my opponents. I am doing what you are telling me to do. I have the Nintendo Pro Controller. All the other controls work. That right joystick, I was trying to like push down on it. You told me, no, you got to just pull down on it. I have pulled down. I have pulled up. I have pulled sideways. I've done it gently. I've pulled down. I've yanked down hard on it. I've been yanking it up and down, left and right. Nothing is happening. Nothing is happening. So I don't know what I'm doing wrong. I don't know if there's something wrong with the controller. All I know is I'm pushing it up and down. I'm yanking it up and down, and nothing is happening. So I might have to go and buy another controller. But I will figure it out. I will figure out why my stick is not working. Big Al made it with the $8 super chat. Many people say that AEW is not growing their audience. I don't feel like there's any sign that they are disappointed about that. What say you? Much love and respect from Japan. Well, Big Al. Thank you, Big Al, all the way from Japan. Look, if you look at the numbers, if you look at the television ratings and the attendance year over year, their numbers are up from where they were this time last year in 2020. So anybody telling you that AEW is not growing their audience, it is demonstrably false. They don't know what they're talking about. Do they cater a lot to their own audience of hardcores with the way they book and write some of their television? Yes. Yes. But to say that they're not growing and they're not growing their audience is just factually incorrect. It's just not true. And these are people who are talking out of their rear end and don't know what they're talking about. And the numbers don't lie. So I don't know what else I could say on it other than these people have no idea what they're talking about. Dry chicken without flavor. Private Party with Andrade is perfect on camera. Matt Hardy did a great job mentoring them camera off, but camera on, Private Party needs to break away. Yes, as Maz said, I could not have said it better myself. The audience numbers don't lie, and they spell disaster for all the trolls as sacrifice. The Mount Vernon Kid, the Alpha. In my opinion, the worst thing on tonight's show was the Vicky segment. I agree. Doar with the $5 super chat. Is Wardlow his first or last name? I believe it is his last name. I think his name is Michael Wardlow. file under things I never thought of until just now. No, his last name is Ward. Joseph Brooks, $9.99 super chat. How would you have booked the invasion in How would you have booked the invasion in 01? And most importantly, how would you have started it? I would have had DDP be the first invader. Damn sure not how they would have, or how they booked him in real life. You gotta find the... I don't know the episode offhand. I've answered this question before, and I've given more of an elaborate answer about what I would have done. It would have involved Bischoff. And I know Bischoff, they tried to get him. He didn't want to come in. But in like a best case sort of fantasy booking scenario, you would not have had Eric Bischoff showing up on WWF television and hugging Vince McMahon. Or at least not hugging him without kicking him in the nuts after the fact. It would have involved the NWO members. It would have involved Bischoff. And again, I don't even have time to map the whole thing out. But if you could find that episode, and I don't remember what it was, but I would have done a much better job than what they did. So yeah, I will see if I could find it for you. But I know I've answered that question before. Samoan Fan 101, did you see Flair's comments on Bryan Danielson? Yes, I did. And if that's his opinion, then he's entitled to have it. Casey is Raw, $2. Veer is still coming to Raw, pretty sure in 2023. I think you might be right. Matthew's son, Tony Khan, gets custom TNT belts made to reduce the transmission of diseases. That's right. Tony Khan does not want sexually transmitted diseases going around and spreading around the locker room. I mean, for God's sakes, what if Sting were to win the TNT championship? 63 years old, the man goes home and gives his wife gonorrhea because he got it off the TNT title. Can you imagine? We can't give Sting gonorrhea. Or the clap. Joshua Edwards, $10 super chat. Just became a Sound Off legend. Fucking awesome. I did. I saw your name before, and as I was doing the review, it came up, and I should have mentioned it then. But thank you, Joshua. That is awesome. You also, by the way, if you're on the Legend tier, you have access to the retro audio, the lost original episodes of the podcast from 2007 and 2008 as I upload each one. You got 13 of them up so far, so go back in the archives and check it out. You can hear how timid I used to be when I first started doing this podcast. Marcus says, don't give Mr. Stink the clap. That's right. That's right. What a doctor's appointment that would be. How awkward would that be? Sting comes walking in, 63 years old. Doctor, you know, got to tell the doctor I got the clap now from this championship belt. He's going to ask me how. He's going to look at me like I'm some kind of a freak. Anyway, Joshua, don't you love this new content that you just signed up for? Says, I was wondering your opinion on having Bianca beat Becky and then doing Bianca against Rhea as the feud during the summer. Bianca always steals the big one from Rhea, it seems. I would love to see it. Those are the two shining stars of the women's division, the future of that division. I said it last year when they both won those titles at WrestleMania. Bianca beat Sasha, and Rhea won the title from Asuka, and it looked like all was right with the women's division at that point as far as who they were going to be focusing on. And then we all saw what happened with Rhea. But I would love to see. Maybe not immediately coming out of WrestleMania because, you know, Bianca should not be losing whoever she's going to feud with immediately coming out of WrestleMania. But heading into the summer and SummerSlam, yeah, they're going to be in a big stadium in Nashville, big summer show. Money in the Bank, too, going to be a stadium show. And the same stadium SummerSlam was in last year. So they got some big stadium shows coming up this summer. I'd love to see them put those two together. Naif Al-Safar dropping a couple of super chats here during the stream. We heard from Naif earlier during the watch-along, I believe. So, Naif, I hope you are having a great day or a great morning. Right? Morning, I think. I always forget the time zone difference. Germinator 24, who should give Jade Cargill her first loss? You know, I have not thought about that, and I realized that as I was watching that segment, because they're really pushing hard the idea of her going 30-0, to the point where I think she might not go 30-0. But then if she doesn't go 30-0, who beats her? Who's the babyface that beats her? Put Thunder Rosa on the side. Who would be the babyface that goes over on Jade Cargill? Because Ruby Soho has not been featured at all on any of the main shows now for weeks and weeks and weeks. Serena Deeb is a heel. Hikaru Shida, I don't see it being Shida. Layla Hirsch is a heel. Chris Statlander, I don't see it, but it's possible. Offhand, I don't know. I don't know. I don't see it being Anna Jay or Ty Conti or anything like that. So I'm not sure. There's no obvious answer for that. But Statlander might be the most of all the names that I'm thinking of on the babyface side. She might be the likeliest and the most feasible. Dry Chicken Without Flavor says, Bret Hart to AEW confirmed. Well, nothing is confirmed, but I would think that it's going to happen. And don't forget, we have the Owen Hart tournaments are coming up in May. So one way or the other, I would expect Bret Hart on AEW television very soon. The Mount Vernon Kid, the Alpha. Last one, Solo Monster. March 24th is my birthday. I enter Club 40. I would love a birthday wish from you. Just like I got from another favorite, Simon Miller. As always, much love to you, man. Well, I will wish you a very happy birthday. I will tell you, though, in the interest of full disclosure, that March 24th, really this entire month, is my least favorite month. Because I lost both my parents this month. In fact, I lost both my parents this next week. Tomorrow, I can't even believe it's been that long. Tomorrow will be 7 years to the day that I lost my father. And then 2 days later, it will be 4 years since my mother passed away. So even my friggin' cat, when my cat finally passed away, it was this month, a couple of years ago. So I am not a huge fan of the month of March. But because it is your birthday tomorrow, I will, of course, wish you a very happy birthday. 40 is nothing to be afraid of. I'm sure it's going to go great for you. And I wish you nothing but the best, a very happy, successful, fruitful year for you and yours. And make sure you eat lots of cake and drink lots of whatever your favorite beverage is. Have one on me. So, happy birthday to you. Shin Akuma. With the $20. Thank you for that. Very nice. Very nice of you, Shin. Rewriting my botched question from last week. And if Triple H did not get hurt in 2001, would it have been him challenging Stone Cold for the championship at King of the Ring or SummerSlam? Yes. I believe that was the plan. Plan was, I believe, for Triple H to go babyface and for he and Austin to feud either at SummerSlam or over that entire summer. The two-man power trip would end, and then they would go on to feud. Spaghetti. Would a 60-minute Iron Man match do good numbers for Rampage? I mean, probably not. I think it all depends on who's in the match. If it's two really big names, it might do well. I think Hangman and Danielson proved that an Iron Man match can do pretty good numbers. But it really depends. You really need some big names in that match, or at least one big star in that match. Otherwise, they generally don't do very well. And I think a 60-minute long match at 10 o'clock on a Friday night, I think almost regardless of who's in it, frankly, at that hour of the night, I think it would be ratings poison. On a Friday night at 10 o'clock, I think it would be ratings death. That's what I think. Jared M., thank you for that $30 drop. Brett getting pinned because of salt in the eye was much worse. Well, yeah, it was much worse because he lost. He actually won the other match. I didn't say it was worse, but the match itself. I just never really liked that WrestleMania 10 match. I don't know. Just something about it was just off-putting to me. Maybe it was just the fact that it was Bret's second match of the night, and there was no way it could possibly come anywhere close to the first match he had with Owen. So, I don't know. But thank you, Jared. Casey is Raw. Do you think Canada still honors Chris Benoit Day? I didn't know there was a Chris Benoit Day, but no. I would imagine they do not. Dry chicken without flavor. Watching the New Japan Cup in March Madness college basketball never disappoints. All the upsets and busted brackets. Well, I got some brackets to show you guys here in a few minutes with Be The Book. Joseph Brooks with the 1999. Buy, rent, or sell on what you think is a pretty impressive career. Winning every title in a company like a Y2J. Winning only world titles like a Brock Lesnar. Or be super over and never win any title like Jake the Snake. I think it would be most impressive, the person who makes the most money. That's who I'm going with. You could win absolutely no championships, but you could get paid more than all those other guys. And that, to me, if you can manage that, that means you're super over. That means you're a somebody. And that would make me more impressed than those other things. But since you're limiting me to these three options here, I think it would be more impressive to be super over without ever winning a championship. You know, somebody like The Undertaker. The Undertaker did not need to win a world title. The Undertaker was already over. And when you are that popular and you are that over that you don't even need a championship, you have a level of credibility that very few people can attain. To me, that is more impressive. I would buy on that. I would rent on the world titles, and then I would sell on winning all the other championships. Jason Case with the $5, buy, rent, or sell on the best versions of Kane. Kane from 1998, Kane from 2000, or Kane from 2003. And he was a very big fan of the Kane and Shane feud from 03. All good versions, and I will always be partial to the original Kane from 97, but I have to go 2000. Kane from 2000 was a fucking beast. So I will go 2000, and then 98, and then 2003. Dry chicken without flavor. $10 super chat. I double dog dare WWE NXT to book an Indy Hartwell and Dexter Lumis against Persia Parada and Duke Hudson match at Stand and Deliver. And the winning couple gets to have a live sex celebration. Yes. They get to have sex on the TNT Championship. I would add that stipulation. Shinakuma with the $20. Shout out to my girlfriend of 7 years. I'm one of the few who is looking towards WrestleMania this 7 years. All right. I am one of the few looking towards WrestleMania this year. Her mom and dad are diehards, and each year they cook and party for WrestleMania. And since Austin is coming back, it makes it all worthwhile. Well, that's awesome. That's very cool that they're into it. And I will tell you that Austin coming back is probably the one thing I'm looking forward to the most on WrestleMania this year. And I actually think that's pretty sad, but I am excited to see Austin back and doing more than just a bunch of whats and hitting a single stunner. Whatever he's going to do, clearly he's going to do more than that. You heard the reaction on TV. How great was that segment, by the way, to open the show on Monday? I fucking love that opening segment. When that music hits in Dallas, that building is going to erupt. And that's going to be one of those moments where I do wish I was there. I will wish that I was in the building when that glass shatters and he comes walking in. But no, that's very cool. That's very cool, Shin. And Hulkling 93. First thing I said was Ty Page, the TNT title. Yeah, she was the first thing I thought of, too, is that poor, whoever was the next NXT Women's Champion at that time, that poor person. What must they have thought when those photos came out? Let's see here. Paul Heyman. Wait, so WWE has Cody and AEW has Shane. Who would have thought? It It's nice to see Shane doing his thing on Rampage after being sent home by the McMahons. His name is Swerve now. Swerve. Gotta get it right. He's not going by Shane anymore. He's now Swerve. Thank you, as always, Paul Heyman, the wise man. And Nick Grasso, what's your thoughts on WWE ruining the Dusty Tag Team Classic last night? Well, I have not watched NXT yet, so I don't know what you're talking about as far as how they ruined it. I will probably not watch NXT until tomorrow, probably tomorrow. So I don't know. I know who won, but I don't know how they won. So apparently, I now have something to look forward to when I watch this show. And Samoan Fan 101, do you think Brian Cage would be a good fit for Ring of Honor? I think Brian Cage would be a good fit for television wherever he can get it. Because he's clearly not getting it in AEW, even though they rolled over his contract. I don't actually think he would be a good fit for Ring of Honor. I think he would be better off doing something on AEW television. When I think of Ring of Honor, I don't think of Brian Cage. So, I don't think that's a move I would make. It would almost feel like Tony Khan is just sort of, almost like he bought a company just to give Brian Cage another place other than Dynamite and Rampage to be. What if it came out that Tony Khan bought Ring of Honor just to give Brian Cage something to do? That would be funny. Manny with the $10 Russo on it. Look at baby Russo. Look at him. Look how tiny he is. Randy Orton is point. Look at that. Look how tiny he is. Tiny brain. Manny, what do you think of the criticism of Adam Cole becoming stale? He's obviously still over with the crowd, but do you think he should try something new or add tweaks to his character to keep himself proud? What tweaks? I mean, what can he do? Is he going to come out dressed up like a Transformer again, like he did at the pay-per-view, whatever the fuck he was dressed up as? I don't think he's stale. I don't know where this is coming from. I have criticized the constant kickouts in his matches. And I know we see it up and down in wrestling, you know, all over today. But it seems to be especially bad in his matches, even though I like his matches. But I don't look at Adam Cole and feel like he's stale. So I don't know where that's coming from. I disagree. Samoan Fan 101, Charlotte was champion after Paige. LOL, Team PCB. Well, sucks for her, I guess. Poor Charlotte. Yeah, let's all cry for Charlotte. Let's all cry for Charlotte. Charlotte's had a nice run. I don't think she needs anybody crying for her. I think she's had a very nice run for herself. Joshua Edwards, $5 super chat is coming on in. If AEW had Money in the Bank, who would you have win and why? Men and women. I mean, they basically kind of had their own little version of Money in the Bank. I mean, not exactly, but they had their Face of the Revolution ladder match. I mean, any number of the people that were in that match would be a good fit for Money in the Bank. You know, Keith Lee didn't win. I don't even know that Keith Lee needs it, but someone like Jay Lethal, frankly, who can't even get on television on most weeks, he probably would benefit on the men's side from winning a Money in the Bank briefcase. You could pick a Dan Lambert guy like Ethan Page. You know, I like Ethan Page. Scorpio Sky already has the TNT title, so he's found some success as a singles. Ethan Page still has not, but he's a talented guy. Maybe somebody like him. I don't know. I mean, you put me on the spot here, and AEW's roster is so fucking, I mean, it's so gigantic. I'm sure I'm missing somebody here. There's so many people that, look, when they showed Lance Archer on the show tonight and they were previewing the match with him and Dustin on Rampage this Friday, I legitimately forgot that Lance Archer even worked for AEW. I said, holy shit, I forgot all about him. people just disappear, you know, and I don't know. I think Jay Lethal is a possibility. I think Ricky Starks would be a good fit for something like that. It probably should go to a heel. So I like Starks, actually. Maybe I would go with Starks. As far as the women, who would I have win on the women's side if there was a similar Money in the Bank type thing? Again, this is the problem with me going over the women's roster in my head here. I know I'm forgetting some people who are like a Riho or someone. Do we even know what her status is? Is she even still with the company officially? You know what? Let me bring up the women's roster. Hold on a second. I'm going to bring up the women's roster. I'll tell you who I think should win an AEW version of Money in the Bank for the women. It'd be easier if I have them all listed in front of me here. So let's go to the ladies and see. So this is the current women's roster as they have it listed on the AEW website at allelitewrestling.com as of today. We have Abaddon, who they call Living Dead Girl. We have Anna Jay, AQA, who is out of the reality of wrestling promotion, Booker T's promotion. Britt Baker. Actually, Britt Baker, not for nothing. I know she just had almost a whole year as the women's champion. Britt Baker carrying around that Money in the Bank would actually make a lot of sense. The Bunny, no. Emi Sakura, no. Sheeta, I don't see that. Jade Cargill doesn't need it. Jamie Hayter. Jamie Hayter's a possibility. Chris Statlander, also a possibility. Leva Bates, who I don't believe is under a full-time deal with them anymore. I don't think. Layla Hirsch, no. Mercedes Martinez, I wouldn't have her win. Nyla Rose, no. Paige Van Zandt, no. Penelope Ford, Rebel, Red Velvet, Riho, Ruby Soho, Serena Deeb, Ty Conti, Thunder Rosa, and Yuka Sakazaki. So that is the women's roster as it is currently listed. Honestly, and I said the bunny. Well, she could hop away. I'm not picking the bunny. I would probably, looking at this roster, I would vote for either Chris Statlander or Jamie Hayter. I think I would go Statlander or Hayter on the women's side. If I look at the men's roster, again, the men's roster is just so much bigger. You know, look, Swerve Strickland could be a good candidate for a Money in the Bank concept. I'd have Swerve on my short list. I would have... You know, a name I would love to throw out there, Santana. And by the way, this could be for any championship. We're not just talking the AEW world title. It could be the TNT title. I would have Santana on my list of names to consider. Ricky Starks, absolutely. He probably would be my leading candidate. Pac, you got to have Pac on that list. Malachi Black, you know, Malachi Black doesn't need that, though. I wouldn't have Malachi Black on there. Let's see. Who else? Jungle Boy? Probably not Jungle Boy. Joey Janela, he's on his way. I don't even know. Well, I guess technically he's still under contract. Not for much longer, he's not. Jay Lethal would be on the list. Hook doesn't need Money in the Bank. Hook don't need no fucking briefcase. Darby doesn't need it. Daniel Garcia, yeah, I could see Daniel Garcia. Hey, maybe CM Punk wins the AEW World title and then Colt Cabana wins their version of Money in the Bank. And then he sneaks in and he whacks Punk over the head with the briefcase and pins him with the championship. What a fucking terrible idea that would be. Who else we got here? Buddy Matthews. There's a lot of good potential candidates, but I still like Ricky Starks as the potential winner there. Yeah, I think I might go with him. So, good question. Juan Ocampo, are you a better dancer than Charlotte Flair? Probably not, but I have not seen Charlotte Flair dance. I heard there was some kind of a video from a wedding or something, but I didn't actually watch it because I don't give a shit. So, dry chicken without flavor. Would Scarlett and Killer Cross be a good fit in the House of Black? No. No, I don't see it. All right, well, let's move on here. If more messages come in, I will read them. Thank you for the support so far, by the way. But it is now time for your favorite segment. It is time to look at my king. You know, we have Queen Charmel going into the WWE Hall of Fame this year. So it's only appropriate that we do a King Booker, right? But we do Be the Booker.
Ladies and gentlemen, it is now time to
Be the Booker. Yes, 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 yes. It is time to be the Booker. Hey, Daryl. Holy shit. Daryl Harrison says today it's his birthday. Happy birthday, Daryl. You didn't tell me how old you are. So I will assume that you are probably 54 years old. Happy birthday, Daryl. But it is indeed time to be the Booker. And I mentioned brackets earlier. Mentioned brackets. Got to do some bracketology here. Hey, dry chicken without flavor. Dropping $5 here during our Be the Booker. It says, I'm coming, Solomon, sir. I am inevitable. The AEW Women's Tag Team titles. Oh, boy. Boots, $5 super chat. Somewhere, there is a diehard AEW Cody Rhodes teen fan who is living through what MJF went through when CM Punk left WWE. That's right. And in 20 years' time, that person will be the heavyweight champion of the world. Yeah, I always said that Izzy the Superfan would beat the hell out of Bayley one day. I stand by that. But we do have the brackets are now put together, and I will show you what I am talking about. This is the men's bracket. Now, over the last several weeks, we have been doing these random main events. You know, we're booking these random main events. Each match that I booked goes into the bracket. I decided on what order they should be in. And so this is the bracket that you see on your screen. I already posted this under the community section on YouTube as well. And what I have started doing is I have started putting the polls up. We're doing the polling on YouTube, not on Twitter. And each day I'll put up a couple of new ones. So the first one is already up. You can vote on which match you would like to see the most. Which main event do you think should move on to the next round? Is it Kofi Kingston against Razor Ramon? Or is it Goldberg against DDP? You can vote on that right now. And in the days ahead, we'll put up the other matches as well. But we don't just have a men's bracket. We also have a women's bracket. There you see the women's bracket. Take a look at it. And no, Lacey Von Erich being in there twice is not a botch. She came up twice. In all honesty, when I drew her the second time, I really should have just did it over, but I didn't do it. So anyway, she's in there twice in two different matches. But right now, you can vote on Nyla Rose against Alexa Bliss or Saray against Betty White in the opening round. So head on over to the community tab here on the YouTube channel and vote. We'll keep the polling up for a few more days. But without any further ado, let's book some matches. Now, these are not part of any kind of tournament. This is just a regular old Be the Booker segment. So again, this will have nothing to do with the tournament. We're just booking ourselves what we hope is a good main event. I hope. My fingers are crossed. Let's see. Eric Bischoff. Eric Bischoff against who? Oh, let it be Vince, right? Let it be Vince. Eric Bischoff one-on-one against Maxwell Jacob Friedman. I can't call that a winner. I can't call that a winner. I can't do it. Can't do it. But let's move on to the ladies. and try with the women. And we'll pick Brie Bella. Do I even need to pick her opponent? Fucking Brie mode. I should just end the segment right here. I mean, there's no point in even going on. There is no possible opponent that I could land on that would make me do anything but this. But I shall try anyway. Just for shits and giggles, let's see who her opponent will be. Brie Bella one-on-one with Laurel Van Ness. That's Chelsea Green's old gimmick from Impact Wrestling. I told you it was going to be a loser no matter what. Unbelievable. And so ends Be the Booker for this week. Brie Bella. Fucking Brie mode. And now all of a sudden I'm having flashbacks all over again, like fucking Nam. Manami Toyota. No. Even if it landed on Manami Toyota, it would have been a buzzer. Oh, boy. Anyway. The Brie Mode song gives me PTSD, says Nick. Gives you. You obviously never heard my story, did you? You never heard my MRI story. You need to go find that episode of the podcast and understand why I react that way when I land on her on that segment. Boy, you have a lot of faith in Manami Toyota. I guess Manami Toyota in her prime, I suppose, could have made that a pretty decent match. I just hope Brie wouldn't kill herself in the match. A couple of different times I can remember her going for a suicide dive that almost turned into a legit suicide. Got her legs caught in the ropes, almost took a header down, face planted on the floor. Samoan fan has a super chat coming in. You got Nia Jax three times so far. Poor Solomonster. Well, at least I didn't get her tonight, so that's good. Bliss fan says, how is it possible the build to WrestleMania this year is worse than the 2 years without fans? It is quite impressive. It is rather impressive that they have two nights of WrestleMania in this gigantic stadium. And here we are a few weeks away, and boy, this does not feel like a big-time WrestleMania build, to say the least. The nurse did not play Brie mode while I had my MRI. I don't want to repeat the entire story from start to finish, but to kind of sum it up, I went in for an MRI, and I was able to have them play music. I think it was specifically wrestling songs, or a playlist that had a lot of wrestling music in it, off my phone, my iPhone, over the loudspeaker. And you know, in an MRI, you can't move. You're in this tube. You're not supposed to move, or you'll screw everything up. And yes, fucking Brie mode came on, and you can see a single tear streaming down my face as I was paralyzed and could not move as I listened to this song. Brie is the Route 66 of pro wrestling. Oh, boy. Anyway. Enough of this. Let me once again remind all of you, if you have not already checked it out, get your ass over to Sound Off Gamer First Edition. The first gameplay for 2K22 is up on the channel. Over 20 minutes of me being generally terrible. But we'll get better. We'll get better, and soon. Oh, yes. Solomonster will be passing through the Performance Center. And then we will see how well the Solomonster does in the WWE system. And if you are a channel member, make sure you go back and follow along for the WrestleMania 13 submission match. Watch along. If you are not a channel member, now would be a great time to become one, because as soon as you do, Regardless of what tier, you will have access to this and all future watch-alongs. We have a bunch of them playing. There's a lot of big anniversaries this year. I was mentioning this earlier. A lot of big anniversaries this year. The, of course, the Montreal match is coming up in November. 25 years since the Montreal Screwjob. I'm sure we'll probably do a watch-along for that. The first ever Hell in a Cell later this year. Shawn Michaels and The Undertaker. The Canadian Stampede 10-man tag coming up in July. And there might be a few even before that. So I'm kind of mapping out what the really big special matches are that I think would make for a good watch-along. So they don't all necessarily need to be tied in all the time to anniversaries. But there's so many of them this year, it only just made sense. That's why, yeah, I thought we would do the submission match earlier today. So I will be back with you live on Friday night for SmackDown and Rampage. And we'll do that after 11 p.m. as we always do. I'll be back with you on Sunday for episode 749. That's pretty close to 750, isn't it? 749 of the podcast coming up on Sunday. And that's all I got. So until then, be well, stay safe. And I will see you guys back here very soon for more live sound-off content. Thank you for all the super chats, and thank you for your support. Hit that like button on your way out. Peace.